Hello listeners, I'm Ryan DeBrawl. Welcome to an interview with Jay Kiebers, creator of several excellent online strategy games, including Neptune's Pride, Blade of the Immortals, Jupiter's Folly, and the subject of today's interview, Neptune's Pride 2, Triton. Hello Jay, thanks for being here.
Thank you, glad to be here.
We have been obsessed with your game, Neptune's Pride, for a couple weeks now. We check it all the time, and it's ruined a couple friendships already.
Oh, no. That's not good.
No, just kidding. It's been a lot of great fun, so we wanted to sit down with you today and just discuss, you know, some of your ideas about it and how it came into being, and just get a general impression of where you see the project going in the future.
Sounds great.
All right, so I'll just jump right in here. What I'd like to know, the first question is, how did the idea for Neptune's Pride originate? What inspired you to create the game?
Well, actually, Neptune's Pride is just a sort of a modern revision of a game that I used to love playing years and years ago a lot. You know, the old play-by-email space strategy games. There's a lot of them out there, but one I played a lot of was called Stars, actually. Stars with an exclamation mark. And it was a sort of a simultaneous turn-based game, and we used to email turns to each other, all the players, and it was a lot of fun. So I wanted to take the concept, simplify it a little bit, make it easy to play so it's on the web.
Sure.
I also really liked the diplomacy aspect from the classic board game diplomacy. So sort of bring a bit of that sort of negotiation and alliances and that kind of thing into the game as well.
Oh, awesome. When I try to describe it to people, I start with, well, it's like a little bit like Risk that takes place mm-hmm. in space, mm-hmm. but you make enemies with all your friends. So,
yeah, well, I mean, that's something that I'm a big fan of board games. Okay. And computer games as well, but I'm trying to bring some of the things I like from board games, like Risk, into sort of an online game. You know, a lot of the strategy games you can find on the web these days, you know, they want to be MMOs. There's thousands of people and you have to join a clan and go out and fight a battle. Whereas I liked the sort of the small, you get to know the five or six people you're playing against, you get to chat with them. I think it's far more interesting, and that's what I wanted to do differently in Neptune's Pride.
Excellent. How long did it take you to create the original Neptune's Pride?
The original was actually a very short project, probably only 3 months working full-time to get a sort of a first playable version. It was a bit rough around the edges, but I had a lot of people come and help me play and test and give me feedback. So about 3 months for the first version, but then I spent, you know, about 6 months improving it and working on it, things like that.
How is that length of time compared to your development time so far on Neptune's Pride 2 Triton?
It's about the same, really. I had Neptune's Pride 1 to build on.
Sure.
I took a few false starts with Neptune's Pride 2. I knew I wanted to switch to sort of a HTML5 interface so that you didn't need Flash anymore. So I built a big interface for it, but then I sort of realized it would be really great to be able to play and check in your turns from a phone.
Sure.
And so I took a step back and made sure that the interface worked on small screens like phones. And that was probably 2 months of work to sort of scrap the interface that I wrote and rewrite it so that it worked on, you know, lighter machine, you know, machines without very fast processors and, you know, very small screens.
When I noticed that the sequel to Neptune's Pride was actually HTML5 based, first thing I actually did was jump on my Android phone to see if it worked. And sure enough, it's like, oh, I can take my obsession on the road with me. Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, it's not perfect. It's certainly not as good as a native app. And everyone says, well, Jay, you know, why don't you make a native app? You'll get so many more people. But it's a lot of work for a single developer to try and manage a native app for Android and
oh,
iOS
sure.
and maybe Windows Phone as well. Whereas even though it's not perfect, it's still you can still check, you know, you can check where your fleets are doing, you can upgrade your stars. You know, it works. It might be a bit slow, but you can do it. And that's more important to me than having a really slick interface, you know.
Right, and it's a product still under development anyway, so, you know,
why
split your resources on multiple platforms?
Yeah, and it's amazing. Like, I always knew in the back of my head what's great about HTML5 is that you can, you know, you write it once and it works everywhere, but it wasn't until I started seeing that people are playing from all kinds of weird, wacky computers. I got people playing on the Wii U console,
really?
You know, checking in from all different types of tablets and things. You know, I play from my iPad all the time, just while I'm lying on the couch watching a bit of TV. Mm-hmm. It's been really good.
Yeah, like I said, I got it on the Android now. At first, I just played it from the computer. I played Neptune's Pride 1 for a couple weeks before I even realized that there was a sequel already in the works. And as soon as I learned that it was HTML5, I started taking it out of the house, going down to the coffee shop and playing it. So, it's great to be able to break that chain and, you know, get it out there.
Yeah, that's cool.
So one thing I was particularly interested in is what were the basis for the in-game mathematics, like ship speed and cost of upgrades, etc.? Did you base it off any specific model, or did you simply use trial and error?
I think it was a bit of trial and error, you know, and it might not be perfect yet. I just sort of threw some numbers together. I'm not a mathematician. I don't even really consider myself a programmer. You know, I'm more of a game designer, you know, I was a producer when I worked at, you know, in the big game studios. So I kind of just, I fudged my way through it, and I thought about the mechanics that I wanted, the player to experience, and just tweaked it as per player feedback. One thing I think is super important is like, talking to you guys, the players, you know, and finding out what's working, what's not working, and really paying attention to that, you know.
Yeah, I only just recently started using the Google Plus group that you linked from the homepage, and that's been an excellent resource. People are sharing guides, and people are making suggestions, and they're reporting bugs, and you've been very present in the development community. You know, I mean, it's nice to be able to actually get a hold of the person working on a game and actually be able to get direct feedback from them. So it's much appreciated on my end, and I'm sure a lot of people agree.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't say how important it is for me, for you guys. You know, like, it's such an important part of the development process is to get that feedback. And as an indie developer, it's so hard to get usually.
Right.
Whereas I, you know, and sometimes I get a little bit of criticism for opening up, you know, the game so early, and a lot of games companies like to hide away because sometimes I make mistakes. You know, sometimes I release bugs, or sometimes I make a stupid suggestion or implement a feature that's no good. But I'd rather just do it and get it out there, and for a great community of players to tell me, like, Jay, that's not right, and pull it back, you know, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, testing under fire.
Yeah, I think it's the best way to develop. I don't think I would like to go back to a sort of an old development model, or even just developing an app for iPad or iPhone. You know, I can release changes to the game, you know, on an hour by hour basis. You know,
right.
If I release something in it and we find there's a bug in anything, I can just push a new change out straight away and get that bug fixed. Whereas, you know, with an iPad app, it has to go back through, you know, Apple certification and review, and it could take weeks for me to fix a bug. So I think web games are really great, and talking to your community and getting them involved is super good for this kind of web game.
Yeah, I haven't really played a lot of many browser-based games just because they have that certain stigma surrounding them. So when I stumbled across Neptune's Pride, I mean...
I was surprised by how quickly I was addicted to it, because it just seemed like the perfect medium for the browser. You know, a lot of people just want to recreate Tetris or Pong or something like that, but you really did something different, so we definitely appreciate it. You were talking about, you know, how sometimes development goes awry or certain things don't work and you have to pull back. Were there any features that you had initially planned for or that you implemented and you eventually had to discard, either due to, say, gameplay balance issues or time constraints?
We've had a lot of fun on the beta playing around with new things. One thing that a few players really enjoyed was we had a system where individual fleets would gain experience points for every enemy ship they destroyed. And they could level up and then have our weapon skill advantages. And it was fun, but I felt that it was going to be a lot of work to have good feedback in the game, have a good interface. So I pulled that out of the game from one beta version to the next, just until I had enough time to provide enough feedback in the interface and improve how the feature was sort of displayed to the players. Like, I think it was pretty cool. It wasn't enough, you know. It was going to be a lot of work to get right, so I had to pull it. And I think that disappointed a few fans who liked the feature, but I didn't think the game was quite ready for it.
So would that have been like a hero class or like a prestige carriers where you'd actually be able to upgrade individual squadrons?
It was individual. Well, every carrier like gained level, right? So a carrier that had been in a lot of combats and survived, you know, started to get more powerful than the other carriers. And what people would do is they would start to build their own hero carriers by making sure they were reinforced and send them off to do the battle so that they'd get the experience. And you might have new carriers just shuttling ships to the hero carrier.
Sure, you'd have veterans on the battlefield. And
Yeah, that's right. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to sort of have special graphics for those veteran carriers and you know, make a big deal out of it. And that takes some time, so I want to do that again properly one day.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. When you started saying that, it kind of reminded me of Battlestar Galactica, you know, where you have the central heroic ship and you have all the other subships. Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of science fiction in general?
Yeah, of course.
Which series would you consider yourself a fan of?
Well, I'm more of a fan of like novels than of TV shows.
Okay.
But you know, I like Battlestar, of course, and I like all of the quirky different bits and pieces. I'm not a huge fan of like the Star Trek stuff. I'm kind of it's described in fiction as like hard science fiction, you know, when it's actually about the science and not so much about, you know, the space opera. You know what I mean? I'm a huge fan of like a few authors, Ian M. Banks, Peter Hamilton. I think there's a lot of really great hard sci-fi that players should go check out.
Sure, yeah. I actually just finished reading Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card just the other day. Yeah. It was the first major science fiction novel I'd read, and I thought it was excellent. So
yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah. One thing I was particularly interested in asking you, because it's happened to me pretty much every time I played the game, and I'd like to get your sense of it. Have you ever been playing a game that you've been involved with, like, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger, and you've been betrayed in that game? And what I wanted to really get your impression of was, when you were betrayed in a game of Neptune's Pride, were you extremely angry about it, or was there a part of you that really took pride in create an experience that could conjure those kind of emotions in people?
It's rare for me to have that, because I'm the developer of the game. I know, I've seen it all, you know, I expect it all. The secret of Neptune's Pride is that you don't have to be that guy, you know, the betrayer, to win. You know, you can, you know, honor your promises, you can you know, you can be a good ally and win games. And actually, I think the secret of the game is that those positive relationships, it's when you make friends and you are a good ally, that's when the game is really good. That's when the game is really enjoyable. It's the chance that someone might backstab you or betray you. That's what creates the excitement in the game, the fact that it might happen and the tension. Mm-hmm. But I think the best games are the ones where you find a good ally, not the ones where you're betrayed. You know, nobody likes those negative emotions, you know, getting angry and feeling disappointed. But the fact that they can happen, yeah, I think, adds more weight to the rest of the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I never really talked about it out loud before or discussed it, but
it's honestly reassuring for me to hear that it's possible to win the game without turning your back on people. I can definitely see how it's much more rewarding accomplishing things together than it is just, you know, basically doing bold-faced lies and trying not to get caught.
Well, and a lot of people say that. That comes up in a lot of the podcasts, and I think that's the sort of the this might be getting into a bit the airy-fairy territory, but you know, that's the sort of meta message of Neptune's Pride, right? You play with your friends and it's really fun to be, you know, sneaky and plot and plan. And, you know, they talk about that in other articles, and when they talk about it in the press, that's sort of what's exciting. But they always talk about how it feels terrible to be betrayed, and it feels terrible to do that betrayal. You know, it feels like, you know, there's a real emotional response to that. But, you know, you don't have to be that guy if you don't want to. You know, you're choosing to do it, and it's fine, but it makes you feel bad, and you get to... A lot of the games don't give you an opportunity to sort of think about that or explore that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I play publicly. You know, everyone knows who I am in-game, and I can't, you know, I don't want to... You know, I can't, as the admin on the game, right, I've got more information than everyone else. I can't really play that role. So I just play honestly. And you know what? If I don't want to, if I think I'm going to have to attack someone at some stage, I don't promise them that I'll be allies with them forever. I just say, how about we agree not to attack each other for the first 10 days? Or, you know, like, sorry, I can't promise you anything, you know, but how about we share a bit of tech, you know?
Right. That is very interesting. That's an interesting message, and that's actually kind of unexpected, but I'm glad to hear that now.
Yeah, the game needs its heroes and its villains, you know.
Sure.
And I think it is important that some people have some fun, you know, with the backstabbing and some time, but you know, you don't have to be that guy if you don't want to.
What features would you like to see added in future iterations of Neptune's Pride? Is there anything you're working on now, or is there something?
Yep. Actually, on the Google community, I ran a bit of a thread and asked people to vote what they thought was the most important things. And I actually hope to start working on the number one thing on that list, which was some explicit fleet orders. That you can, at the moment, you know, you can fly fleets from star to star and just pick up all the ships or leave a small garrison behind.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it would be much better to be able to specify a sort of a specific action to occur at each star. So, you know, fly to this star, drop 10 off, fly to the next one, pick up another 10, fly to the next one, wait 2 hours.
And then
loop that, you know, do that over and over again.
That sounds like an excellent addition, actually. That's two things that I was hoping that you were going to implement, and it sounds like you've got a good plan right there. Actually, last night, I was about to go to sleep, and there was a group of ships coming towards my star, but it was far away. It was like 3-4 hours away, but it was bedtime for me, so it's like, well, I know I can defeat this guy when he gets here, But then my ship's going to be sitting at the star all night long, and that's a lot of stuff. So, yeah, I think sort of like being able to, I guess, pre-program a flight plan, that sounds like an excellent addition.
Yeah, and just to be able to create little loops of, like, reinforcements and things like that, and then just forget about them, you know, like, okay, this carrier is just going to, like, you know, visit these four stars in a row and collect up all the ships and place them here, you know, and then now I never need to think about that carrier again.
Right.
That kind of thing. I think that will help. At first, I thought, when I was initially designing the game, I didn't add this kind of feature because I thought it sounded too micromanagey, but actually I think it will help reduce the micromanagement.
No, I agree.
We'll see how it goes. I mean, like everything, I might not get it right the first time, and the interface might not be very good, but hopefully with a lot of great feedback from the community, we can polish it up and make it good.
Yeah, I think that something like that would really empower players because they wouldn't be chained to checking in, you know, every cycle. They'd be able to, they'd be free to live their life again, I guess.
Well, we don't want that.
Sure. I guess, last question, have you ever considered going into some sort of digital distributor like Steam Greenlight or something like that?
Yeah, look, I would love to be able to do that. I don't think Steam would be interested in a web game. I could probably bundle it up, but see, there's no single player either. It's a multiplayer only game at the moment. So, look, maybe the long term plans are we write a really good, interesting AI, and we add a bit of a story or something, and we can have a downloadable sort of game. But I think that's a long way off. I am talking to people now about trying to help me market the game. I'm not a very good, good at business and marketing. So I'm talking to some people that hopefully will be able to help me out with that. And I've got a lot of work to do just making the game look interesting and exciting, you know, on the website and improve the tutorials and maybe hire some professional voiceover to do, you know, to make them sound exciting and interesting and stuff, you know, more graphics in the game, maybe a bit of story. Like, I think I need the game rules are pretty cool, but I think it looks pretty dry and a bit drab on the website. And I think that's why I have trouble attracting new players. I mean, what do you think? I mean, what was your impression when you came and saw the game for the first time?
For new players, it's a little bit boggling because you don't know what's going on. But honestly, I didn't even watch any of the tutorial videos. I just read through the less than 2 pages worth of text about the basic game. And, the first game I definitely lost immediately. But then you start learning the tricks of the trade, like, you know, pre-setting garrisons for planets so you don't have a carrier come with one ship and capture a planet that you just passed by. This is like my fourth or fifth game now, but I've only now realized the depth of the technology tree and how it's basically the way I described it to somebody was it's kind of like passive buffs for all your characters, you know what I mean? And I think personally you did an excellent job. I like how that you actually used the game algorithms right there in the tutorials so that the math is right there for people. I really hope that you do continue development on it. You've got a fan for life here.
Thank you. And thanks for helping saying nice things about it and helping get the word out about it. More players, the better.
If you're interested in learning more about Neptune's Pride 2 Triton, you can check it out at triton.ironhelmet.com. You can also connect other Neptune's Pride fans at Iron Helmet's Google Plus and Facebook groups, and follow along with them on Twitter at @IronHelmetGames.